President Obama speaking from the East Room of the White House, telling the nation and the world President Obama is in fact dead. It was a U.S.-led strategic, Osama bin Laden is dead.
Confusing Osama's name with Obama?
It's kind of easy to do.
Osama is dead.
Obama is dead.
Details that have never before been heard about how Obama was killed started when Obama took office. He directed the head of the CIA to make killing Obama their number one priority. They got a possible lead on where Obama might be hiding.
After decades of searching and a worldwide manhunt, federal agents discovered Obama's secret location.
American operatives had learned bin Laden was hiding out.
Osama was hiding out.
The intelligence said Obama was hiding in a compound deep inside Pakistan.
Oh my gosh, did I say Obama or Osama?
So emotional to find out that, in fact, Osama bin Laden had been caught.
Coming to Washington, D.C. on the day that, you know, they take Obama out. I mean,
Osama.
Quite a weekend, wasn't it? Besides that wedding that went on Friday,
and then Friday, you reviewed it
all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Obama finally caught last night.
Fox, we understand our sister station are saying that Osama was buried at sea at 2 a.m. That would be 7 in the morning in the UK, that Osama was buried at sea.
Obama's dead. I don't care. Osama bin Laden is dead. I don't care how he died.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world. The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Absolutely.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
So, hey, not a lot to talk about this week.
No. Star Wars Day, we can talk about that.
Star Wars Day.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite cantina alien? Mine's Greedo.
No, I like Hammerhead. It was my favorite Star Wars action figure because his hammerhead could be inserted in fun places.
I don't know how to answer that.
No, you probably really shouldn't.
I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah. Very convenient shaped head for insertion in places.
So, yeah, by the way, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob.
Yes, it is.
That's Elvis. Brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how that happens so often, where professional broadcasters... Now, I can understand regular people doing it occasionally, but professional broadcasters who somehow manage to work their way all the way up to the level of cable news host can repeatedly mix up the name of the President of the United States and the world's most wanted terrorist.
I don't know. I did it myself the other day. Two days ago, I was talking to somebody about it, and I did it myself. And I think just any word after 2 years of saying Obama, 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 and not saying Osama so much, I can sort of see it. I think people on Fox, and I think some people do it on purpose, but I'm not at all surprised. But it's like Regis Philbin. That guy's not doing it on purpose.
No. No.
So
I don't think.
I think it's just an unfortunate homonym. It's too bad that they sound so much alike, but fuck it. Obama's alive, Osama's sucking it on the bottom of the ocean, so we win.
Well, here's my point, though. I mean, if you're a professional broadcaster, you figure out a way to not do it. I mean, if it happens once or twice, it's like blurting out fuck in the middle of a radio show. If you're doing a broadcast radio show and it's carried over AM radio, for example, and there are FCC rules against saying fuck, then you figure out ways to not say fuck.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they should just all be saying bin Laden. I mean, their news directors should sit them down in the AM and say, look, from now on, just say bin Laden. There's no way starting with a B, bin Laden, will fuck you up into saying Obama. So just say bin Laden.
That's right. I mean, I don't know how many newscasters went around during World War II saying, calling him Adolf.
Well, it's those weird, you know, who knows with the, I don't know, like we all called him Saddam, right? And we didn't go around saying Hussein. It's always, yeah. It's like the, you know, some, in some strange foreign countries where they have skin that's not rosy white like ours, they use their first name last and their last name first. I don't know. It's a cultural thing.
Yeah. But I mean, this goes back to our,
but Osama does sound like, there's no, Bin Laden is fine. Nobody's, Osama does sound very colloquial and personal to me. Hey, Osama.
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 Right. Right. I mean, just, I mean, the way around it is to call him Bin Laden and you call the president, president.
Right. President Obama.
The president or President Obama.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's simple. I mean, it goes back to our West Wing Aaron Sorkin hang up with, you know, calling the president by the respectful title that he has earned.
Right. It's Mr. President.
Mr. President.
It's Mr. McGarry. And somebody tweeted today, there's a Leo McGarry account on Twitter, and he tweeted the whole, remember when McGarry found out that his sister was being nominated for like head of the Department of Education or whatever, mm-hmm. and he found the pictures of her, you know, they got pictures of her at a rally where these kids were being arrested and beaten, and he says, "We do not strut ever." That's exactly what Obama said today, mm-hmm. through Jay Carney. He said, we do not strut.
Yeah.
See, goddamn right. Mm-hmm. I want to see the pictures personally, and I think it's cathartic, and I think everyone has a right to them, but they need to be WikiLeaked or, I mean, unless it's, I was telling God is Dead on Twitter today, unless the photo is like a Polaroid and it's in somebody's fucking pocket, like of their fatigues, that picture's going to leak. I mean, digital media leaks. I mean, that's what it does. It just gets out. It gets viral. So we will see it. We're definitely going to see it, but it's not the fucking White House's responsibility on that. I think they did exactly right. And it lets, you know, it puts some air in the room for Republicans to get all conspiracy theoried up. And then, you know, just like the birth certificate, suck it, bitches. Here's Bin Laden with his fucking head shot off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suck it on ice.
Right. And so, I mean, anyone in the press who thought the White House was going to say, "Oh yeah, here's a picture." Mm-hmm. is a naive idiot because that's exactly how it's going to happen. You're exactly right. It's going to leak out, and it's going to leak out deliberately.
Of course.
But the White House isn't going to say, here it is.
Right, they're not going to put it on ridiculous. Fucking White House stationery from the desk of President Obama. Hey, look at what I did!
You're going to be able to go to
look
White House.
This guy's fucking head caved in.
Yeah, the photo gallery of WhiteHouse.gov. Oh, there it is. Right between the president, pardoning a turkey and launching.
Eating with the kid. Yeah. Like, he's got a little boy on his lap, and he's smiling. And then the next picture on the stream is, like, fucking Osama with it. See, I just did it. I just did it. With his fucking brain sticking out.
Oh, God.
You know SEAL Team 6 shot that fucker right through the eye hole, and it made his brains come out. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be no doubt he's going to be all bloated and bruised. Because I love me some fucking pictures of people with their shit shot up. I just dig it. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
Well, we were talking about Faces of Death a few weeks ago, weren't we?
I got no problem. I got a horrible morbid sense of morbosity. I love it. Love to see some shit shot up. Especially
gore.
Those bad guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I got problems when it's kids. And I mean, like when the Iraq war was going so horribly, there were pictures of these little Iraqi kids with their heads all shot off and everything. That I got problems with. Mm. But this, I want to see me some high def, high resolution Osama with his fucking head blown off.
Yeah.
And it's going to get out there. So it's just, he's so ninja, this president. He's just fucking with him so hard right now. Mm-hmm. So you got one conspiracy theory after another.
Right.
Because it won't matter what they say. They'll say, "Oh, look at that. Look at that shadow." I mean, these are people that, like Jon Stewart said, these are people that don't believe we went to the moon.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yeah. Stephen Colbert said the same thing.
Yeah. You can't talk to people. You can't prove empirical evidence means nothing to these people.
Oh, and the president himself said it at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but kind of preemptively. I mean, he said something to Trump about, examining whether or not the moon landing was faked.
Yeah. Does all he pummeled the shit out of Trump.
That was so
and
great.
It's just so obvious that Trump has no sense of humor about himself.
Mm-hmm. Made him look like the clown
that
he was.
Big
with his
egomaniac, yeah.
With his Ronald
like
McDonald
Sarah
hair.
Sarah Palin's got no sense of humor about herself whatsoever. And it's just it's a function of having a head that big and being a narcissist and an egomaniac like that. You just have no sense of humor about yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Trump just sat there stone-faced while the president just knocked the living shit out of him.
And that big laugh, it was the big, big laugh about making the decision whether or not to kick off Gary Busey, and it's kind of a decision that keeps him up at night.
That's awesome.
And then the whole room just erupts in laughter.
That's your campaign clip if Trump ever got the nomination, which of course he wouldn't. But if he did, that's your campaign clip. The day before this son of a bitch killed Osama bin Laden, he's tearing your shit up like that. Sorry, Donald. 2012 in the bag.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a monumental thing. It's just a monumental thing. The son of a bitch came in and said, when he got to the White House, he called his people in and said, you're going to go get him and you're going to put a fucking bullet in him. And that's the deal. And they did it. They did it.
Mm-hmm.
They went and got him. That's it. That's all it is. I was watching that clip that Lawrence O'Donnell has been channeling Oberman lately. He's like really suddenly not annoying me so much.
Yeah, anymore. The last several rewrites have been fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And he's been playing this clip of Bush just pissing all over the, you know, oh, I don't care about Osama bin Laden. He's marginalized and blah, blah, blah. You know, his smirky McChimp face. And I was asking somebody the other day, if somebody in New York City, if there was a Son of Sam style serial killer running around New York and had killed 2,977 people, what would happen to the official in New York that got up at a press conference and said, we don't know where he is, so we're not worried about it? the biggest casualty of 9/11 was the death of our sense of outrage at ourselves. You know, it's like 9/11 was such a money shot, was such a horror show that all of our American sense of outrage somehow got channeled out externally. Like before Bush, with Clinton, every fucking thing Clinton did was outrage. Oh my God, he got his dick sucked. Oh my God. I mean, everything he did was outrage. After 9/11, we just lost our ability to be outraged by things. Like, why didn't we impeach George Bush for just saying that, for having that thought in his head? Oh, the guy who did it, fuck it.
Yeah. Well, now I have this theory that there was sort of a political shock doctrine happening with the Bush administration, where what they tried to do is to assault us with one thing after the next to be outraged about. And then we got to a point where by maybe 2004, 2005, we just would forget the previous thing
that we were outraged about.
And,
exactly.
And we were just so flooded with outrage that it became, well, just another bullshit thing from these guys.
Yeah.
Not shocking. Yeah.
But, I mean, it was thing after thing after – and, you know, I mean, we've talked about it. I'm a 9/12 Democrat, and it was these things that he kept saying. It was the line coming out of that administration that so sickened me politically that I was like, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. The whole thing about when they asked Ari Fleischer if the press corps asked if – I mean, this was right after 9/11 – if they, the administration, the White House, thought that 9/11 should cause a change in our American attitude or behavior, and Fleischer stood right up there and said that's a big negative. The president thinks the American way of life is a blessed way of life, and basically go shopping was the message from the White House. Mm-hmm. Get out and spend your good old-fashioned – you know, eagle and flag bearing money. Fuck that. I just, it was one thing after another out of this administration. And you're right. We were just too shocked to be shocked anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest. Maddow had an amazing, and I've been saying it for years, and Maddow agrees with me, obviously. She's been reading my work, obviously. But I've been saying for years that 9/11 was an economic attack. It wasn't religious. It wasn't political. It was wholly economic.
Yeah.
And that was the whole – she did a whole thing last night about it, about how obsessed – Osama bin Laden was with the financials of it.
Well, that was the liberal line. That was our line throughout the Bush years. Mm-hmm. That is exactly what his goal was. To make us scared and to bleed us dry financially.
They did to the Soviets in Afghanistan in the 80s.
And all the Republicans who are bitching about the deficit and the national debt right now, they were silent. I mean, the word debt never even came up for 8 years. You know, as we squandered the surplus. I mean, there was a chart that Ezra Klein had, and I horked for the blog, where it showed the CBO projection of the debt going on a downward trajectory. And then all the shit that was lumped in by the Bush administration and then consequently the recession, all the spending that caused the debt to go way up, right? So, so throughout that whole process, it wasn't even mentioned. And meanwhile, in case you haven't heard it yet, here's that clip from George W. Bush. Now, just bear in mind also, as we're listening to this, the contrast between our current president and this retarded, okay?
That and keep in mind that he's slouching on the podium.
Yeah, slouching.
And when they're asking him questions, the look on his face is such disdain that anyone would dare ask Lord George any fucking question about anything. He's got this smirky, chimpy, leaning on the podium thing that makes you want to stomp his fucking nuts in.
That vacant punch me smile.
That smirk. There's this literal look, and we're going to have to frame cap that and put it on the blog when we post this episode, that the look on his face of utter disdain for anybody asking him anything about anything.
That's right. And by the way, I'm not saying that we should punch George W. Bush, but it's a punch me, big punch me smirk throughout this whole thing. And here's the clip.
Fabia.
Mr. President, in your speeches now, you rarely talk or mention Osama bin Laden. Why is that? Also, can you tell the American people you have any more information if you know if he is dead or alive?
Mm-hmm.
Final part here. Deep in your heart, don't you truly believe that until you find out if he is dead or alive, you won't really eliminate the threat of
him? Deep in my heart, I know the man's on the run if he's alive at all. And who knows if he's hiding in some cave or not. We hadn't heard from him in a long time. And
we haven't heard from him in a long time. He's going to call us up and give us a clue.
We hadn't heard from him. Just like in the years between the first World Trade Center bombing and 9/11.
Yeah.
We hadn't heard from him.
I hadn't heard from him.
We don't know. He doesn't send cards or letters anymore.
He hasn't phony phone called us in a while.
Yeah. Hey, George Bush is Osama bin Laden.
Right. I'm Frank Rizzo. I'm going to wrap your head in with a ratchet. He hasn't done his wacky Jerky Boys routine recently.
Yeah.
And so we haven't heard from him.
You got Prince Albert in the can, George Bush.
So we don't know where he is because we haven't star 69'd his prank call.
We hadn't heard from him. We don't know.
We don't know. Fuck him.
He's not relevant.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Smirky bastard.
The idea of focusing on one person is really indicates to me people don't understand the scope of the mission. Terror is bigger than one person.
Terror.
And he's a person who's now been marginalized. His network is host government has been destroyed.
I mean, what's hilarious?
He's the ultimate parasite who found weakness, exploited it.
Yeah.
And met his match. You know, as I mentioned in my speeches, I do mention the fact that this is a fellow who is willing to commit youngsters to their death, and he himself tried.
Youngsters.
Youngsters, right?
Youngsters. Those wacky youngsters with their committing to death.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it so hard for him to simply say, oh, we're still gunning for that fucker, and then move on? He's so stupid that he doesn't even know a question that's just full of political dynamite. He's got to dig himself that hole. It's like the press corps just sat there and let him dig his own hole, just dig himself deeper and deeper. He just kept talking and talking and talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he knows, he's like, oh, Osama bin Laden, the fuck is that? Why didn't you just say, oh, yeah, we're going to get him?
Mm-hmm.
Retard.
Yeah. Well, what was worse is here he is blowing him off, like basically saying that this guy, who is he? I don't know. I don't even remember his name. I don't know who his name is. He's some guy out there in a turban and a beard. And then suddenly, you know, 2 years after he says this, you know, this is March of 2002, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ground Zero was still smoking and smoldering at that point.
Right. Right.
And
this is not years later.
I'm not going to bother with him. But by the way, in 2 years when I run for re-election, I'm going to scare the piss out of everybody with pictures of him.
Right. That's all you're going to hear from me
in
2 years is 9/11, right. 9/11, Osama bin Laden.
9/11, Osama bin Laden. We're even going to use people jumping out of buildings to scare the shit out of you and voting for me. Yeah, here's
the can't be safe except for 9/11.
Here's the rest of it.
It's a hide, if in fact he's hiding at all. So I don't know where he is. Nor do, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. Kelly, to be honest with you, I'm more worried about making sure that our soldiers are well supplied, that the strategy is clear, that the coalition is strong, that when we
that's it.
Yeah, that strong coalition of the Federated States of Micronesia.
Yeah. Meanwhile, these guys didn't have body armor.
Right.
They didn't have Humvees that could repel against IUDs.
That was
did
March
I say IUDs?
2002.
IEDs. I said IUDs.
IUDs. That's intrauterine device.
Goddamn IUDs. Killing our troops.
Well, you know what? I mean, what we didn't know at the time, what the press corps didn't know, was that they were lining their shit up for Iraq at this point, right? I mean, that's March of 2002, so Iraq hadn't happened yet. So he couldn't just say, I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. I got to go after Saddam Hussein, you dummies. He couldn't say that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just the cognitive dissonance going on right now, the absolute break between the bubble world that these people live in and the reality that President Obama got this fucker is so beyond their capacity to compute right now.
Yeah. Well,
that's what's going on.
That's what continuously happens. I mean, that is why I think one of the chief reasons why they're so batshit crazy, because they don't know exactly how to attack this guy. So they go after the weirdest, most ridiculous things because he is completely, everything he does flies in the face of what they'd like to say about him. He's not this radical African-American activist, this, you know, sort of Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson stereotype that they want to superimpose upon him.
Right.
You know, he's not this weak. Sarah Palin called him a pussy on Twitter today.
Pussyfooting.
Yeah, he's not. We'll get to that in a bit. But he's not this dithering wimp.
Right.
And they want to make him to be this. And then when he does something like this, they're completely flummoxed.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what's so brilliant about his political style, is he at every turn he completely flummoxes their ability to attack him.
Right.
So they've got to do things like the birth certificate. They've got to do things like the teleprompter.
Yeah.
Because that's all they can really kind of latch on to.
Just chip away at his legitimacy, you know, little by little, and hope something sticks in some way.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the deliberate in some cases. With Rush Limbaugh was literally doing it as a bit.
Yeah.
For years, where he was saying, Osama Obama.
Right. Osama.
Osama Obama.
Yeah. Very clever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's what they have to latch onto, because they don't really have anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is not a president that gives the, unlike Bill Clinton, who, you know, couldn't wait to hand his political enemies just all kinds of firepower and somehow survived it all. This president just is bulletproof, mm-hmm. politically.
Yeah.
Hopefully, and also literally.
Yeah.
Because
well.
I honestly think he's Batman in his spare time. I mean, I pray to God that that it's true that, like, he pushes a button on the Resolute desk and his chair goes down into some fucking amazing high tech presidential bat cave. That would be I want to see Obama's bat cave.
What's become clear too, I think, in watching that clip of George W. Bush, is the contrast emphasizes it even more, is this current president's political discipline is unrivaled. I mean, he could have received the intelligence, the whereabouts of this compound in Abbottabad.
Yeah.
Back in August.
And just said, and so
he, go get him. But he didn't do that. He said, we're going to make sure, and then we're going to do it the right way. And you know how we're going to do it the right way? Navy SEAL Team 6 is going to build a scale replica of this goddamn compound, and they're going to
do that all the time.
They do it all the time. Yeah,
they did that for the raid on the Ayatollah, on the compound in Iran back in the 70s during that whole thing.
They built
a whole fucking model of the compound. Hmm. And then they all died in the desert, but
Right.
Somehow that was Carter's fault.
Well, we're going to send the guys who killed the Somali pirates in there. And they're going to do it the right way.
They're good at some fucking killing.
And we're going to get them. And so I was looking at those pictures. I just couldn't imagine being in the Situation Room as all of this was happening. I mean, can you imagine
those are amazing pictures.
The tension.
Oh, that especially Hillary Clinton. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know that what I picture it like – this is how I picture it. Remember that scene in Aliens when Ripley and that piece of shit Gorman are in the in the tank and they're watching the helmet cams on the Marines, the alien – the intergalactic supermarines? They've all got helmet cams and body – you know, they got like the heart rate and everything. And then they just get attacked by aliens and they're watching that. And she's like, do something, Gorman. That's how I – that's what I'm picturing. Like they're watching helmet cam of SEAL Team 6 dude put a bullet in Osama bin Laden's eye. That's what those faces are.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And again,
there's Obama sitting in the fucking corner like, I'm rocking the shit out of this meeting. I'm just sitting in the corner. He's just so badass.
Yeah.
He's so badass. He doesn't even have to be – I mean, he's got his POTUS jacket on and no tie, and he's sitting in the corner watching – terrorists get shot.
Yeah, but he's got a look on his face. He's got a Lawrence O'Donnell stare in one picture where he just looked like he's going to fire laser beams through your stomach.
Oh, yeah.
With that stare.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to cross that. I mean, Tweety said it best the other day. He said that this president is cold-blooded. He meant it as a compliment. Cold-blooded. Mm-hmm. Like, he will eat your fucking lunch. This president.
The thing I
love that picture. I want to blow it up and I want to make a poster out of that picture.
I kept thinking about the scenes from 13 Days and then, of course, you know, lending that insight into what the XCOM team was actually like as the quarantine went into effect during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
Sitting there in that room waiting to see what the Soviets were going to do.
Oh, my God.
And the tension.
Oh, the scale, infinitely. I mean, an order of magnitude, a trillion times. I mean, those people in that room, that XCOM room, my good friend Ted Sorensen included, they were playing with the fate of the fucking planet. I mean, they had the fate of the world in their hands. That is a fucking tense meeting. Mm-hmm. That those days, man. Yeah, but to have a picture like the and Sullivan or somebody today posted a thing about can you imagine the Bush administration releasing a picture like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's amazing that we've got it at all. I'm fascinated by what that Flickr stream releases pictures of, you know, shit of inside the war room and inside the, it's like, I can't believe they get clearance to release these pictures. And there it is. There's a picture right there. There's a photographer taking pictures of people watching this shit happen in real time. It's mind boggling. Mm-hmm. I love it.
You remember the clip, and I hate to keep going back to this because it almost gets to the point of being caricature. But to go back to George W. Bush for a second, remember when they released clips of George W. Bush? I guess it was in the Situation Room or some room in the White House where he was getting briefed on Katrina.
Yeah.
This is that vacant stare. It's like,
or the look on his face, you know, when he's reading Monkey the Goat Boy or whatever to the kids when he hears about the second plane. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that face, just looks like he had a bad tamale that day, that face. Like he's about to let one rip in front of some third graders.
Yeah.
That face. Absolutely childlike mentality going on behind that smirk.
Yeah. So, I mean,
just
this guy.
Little tiny pea brain.
This president has. I mean, at least amongst modern presidents, some of the most steely discipline of any of them. God. Because, I mean, if
he's
you look
like
at
a Buddhist monk.
Exactly. If you look through the events over the weekend, or if you go back to the election, for example, I mean, there were a lot of times when he could have flipped his shit on some of the stuff that was coming out of the Clinton campaign or some
at
of the
a
stuff
Howard
that,
Dean moment, basically.
That, yeah, exactly. He could have completely disintegrated like Howard Dean. That's exactly right.
But Howard
right.
Dean didn't disintegrate. He just had a weird moment and the press turned it into a disintegration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just had a weird hyper, you know, human emotional moment and the press turned it into a fucking clown show.
Mm-hmm.
But Obama never. Yeah. I mean,
but he's
that picture. Chill the fuck out. I got this.
Yeah.
That has turned. That's the mantra of his entire presidency. Has turned into, it's just his political style. Chill the fuck out. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew this show was going to turn into just a complete, you know, Obama ball waxing. Well, you know what? I'm typically the one that tempers that attitude because I don't want to. I got into a tweet war brief. Burned very hot and bright and very brief with Adam Baldwin, the actor, today. Mm-hmm. And Oliver Willis got into almost this exact same kind of scrape. And I hate being lumped into that sort of Obama bot category where I've got nothing but good things to say and I'm a fucking sheep and, you know, I'm brainwashed and I drink the Kool-Aid because I don't think I'm like that at all. But on this issue, motherfuck it. He killed bin Laden. That's it. Done.
Well, someone's got to do it. I mean, someone's got to say it because, I mean, already the press is on to their day three story, which is where the fuck are the pictures? Yeah.
Where the pictures are a byproduct of this larger issue, which is why did we kick the door in and shoot him when we could have held his hand and gone tripping merrily down, you know, Pakistan Lane?
I was just going to say that too.
I don't these people have no understanding of what this is. I mean, we're either at war or we're not, right? As far as I'm concerned, he's a casualty of war. The whole fucking thing started because of this guy. I don't understand these pundits and these talking head idiots who was he armed? Was he reaching for something? Who gives a shit? You kick the door down, you kill everything in the room. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's done. That's it. Done. You kick the door in and you shoot every motherfucker in that room in the eye hole. Yeah. I don't care who it is. If you're 7 years old, you know that Osama bin Laden is a douche. That if you're hanging out with Osama bin Laden, chances are somebody's going to come and kick your door in someday. You bought it. Sorry. If you know that the guy that you're bunking up with in your Abbottabad mansion or whatever this compound is Osama bin Laden, chances are someone's going to fucking drop a bomb on you. Sorry.
Yeah. And we're hearing that, too, and predictably so, from the firebagger left. From
From
the
Glenn
same
Greenwald.
People who always hear Glenn Greenwald, David Soretta.
Why did I have to shoot him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's a douche and he needed to get shot.
Yeah. Well, that was the only way to make sure. If you go back to 1945, you got Hitler in your sights, you're going to shoot him.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? Just walk up and try to arrest him, abscond off with him? You know, you just got to do it. You've got to take him out. If you have the opportunity to take him out, you take him out. It never happened with Hitler, obviously. But I mean, if that opportunity had been there, I assure you they would have shot him.
Yeah. And all these questions are moot. The mission was not to go in and throw the zip cuffs on him and bring him in, because God only knows what a monkey show the GOP would make out of that. Where to try him and how to try him and, oh, we ought to waterboard him. We ought to shoot him to Mars. Fuck that. The mission was kick his door in and put some bullets in him. Period. Mm-hmm. That's it. So what does the media have to now talk about?
So we're getting all of this sort of self-serving guilt tripping. Anyone who's at all gleeful about the death of Osama bin Laden is somehow either betraying their liberal values or,
well, that's just a misunderstanding.
You know, being jingoistic or whatever. I mean, here's Glenn.
Gleeful about the fact that he's dead.
Yeah.
We're gleeful about the fact that he's been ended. His reign of terror is over. His specifically, it's done. It's not bloodlust or vengeance or anything else. It's just, hey, you know, it's good news that this is a guy that's now no longer living.
Well, part of the ecstasy of that moment is that no one expected that this was ever even going to happen.
Right.
I think a lot of us, and myself especially, I never thought in a million years that we were going to actually get him.
Oh, no,
that he was either dead already or that, yeah, or that he was just going to be so elusive. I mean, if you just look at the geography of that whole region, there are infinite numbers,
a
needle in a haystack. Exactly right. And so when they actually got him, and it was done in this way by this president, following up on a very specific and repeated campaign promise, you go, well, fucking A. That's exactly the way. Yeah. I mean, they got him. I mean, you know, Vader throwing the Emperor down the pit because it's Star Wars Day. It was
The jubilation is just this. It's like you go 10 years with no fucking Christmas, like you live in no Christmas land. And suddenly you know, on, in like June, somebody hands you a Christmas present. You know, it's just like you've lived your life so years. We just, fuck, we're never going to get this guy. Needle in a haystack. And then all of a sudden you're just given this present. Like, oh, remember that guy, Bin Laden? Yeah, we just shot him. We just shot his ass up. He's dead. It's just this sudden bursting. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I just absolutely. And then when the president comes, I mean, he just comes marching up to that podium and says, you know, and gives that little, I was overwhelmed with gratitude. Just, and it wasn't specific to Obama. It was just USA. Fuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And I hate that kind of jingoism normally. I hate it.
Yeah.
I loathe it. But it was a genuine, finally, that's what it is. Now that I'm saying it, it was finally a genuine expression of relief and gratitude and righteousness following 9/11 that the invasion of Afghanistan never was. The invasion of Iraq certainly never was. Even I didn't give a shit when we found Saddam Hussein living in a hole. I can give a rat's ass. This was the final, 10 years later, we finally got to celebrate something specific to 9/11.
Yeah. It's like what Maddow said that night, as she was on the phone with the live coverage, and she said something to the effect of, I mean, this feels like an accomplishment. This feels like something America did. And and it's so rare that we have something that's clean cut, that's easy to grasp in terms of a major, major success. I mean, you had the previous administration. I mean, they really tried to ballyhoo, you know, first it was the victory in Afghanistan, which turned out to not be a victory. Then it was the victory in Iraq, which turned out to not be a victory. Then it was a series of fuck-ups, one after another, going back to our outrage machine, our outrage fatigue generated by those guys, I believe, deliberately. Yeah. And finally, we've got something where we can say, yeah, you know, it can be encapsulated in very few words, and these are the words.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
Right, and it doesn't require any sort of charts from the CBO. It doesn't require complex analysis. This is a clean-cut, clear success.
Right. Kicked the door in, shot him in his ass. Mm-hmm. Done.
Done. That's right.
We should talk about soap now.
Yeah, we got to. God. Almost forgot. Today's show brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com at www.BubbleGenius.com. You know, by the way, speaking of Sarah Finowitz and Brian Butterfield, which is how I read that website address in that sketch, when the president first said Abbottabad, I swear to God, I thought he said bum, 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 bum.
Bum, 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 bum.
Bum, 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 bum. I was like, holy shit, they found bin Laden at bum, 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 bum? And I immediately tweeted that. I was like, I tweeted Sarah Finowitz. I was like, hey, listen, they found Osama bin Laden in bum, 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 bum.
Bum, bum. Did he respond back?
No, of course not.
No, he's got a million followers.
But I did, you know, I did get retweeted by Dule Hill.
Ooh, yeah, I got a couple of retweets from Dule myself.
Oh, yeah, so there is stuff from Bubble Genius this week. It's coming up is Peace, Love, and Happiness because of National Anxiety and Depression Awareness Week next week.
Oh, Lord, that's my week.
and we're going to hear from Bubble Genius and their new commercial right now.
Hey!
Hey!
What's the matter? You look anxious and depressed.
I am anxious and depressed. I've had a terrible week. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong.
I know just what you need. I was feeling the same way myself last week. I have just the thing. Peace, love, and happiness.
Wow. Pretty. A peace sign, a heart, and a smiley face soap. Grapefruit, cucumber, and rose.
They work wonders. Why, look at the week Barack Obama just had. I sent him some peace, love, and happiness on Friday, and I'm not saying it had anything to do with it, but look how great his weekend went.
Ah, just looking at them makes me feel better. Thanks, Bubble Genius.
Did you know next week is National Anxiety and Depression Awareness Week? Make yourself happy with peace, love, and happiness.
BubbleGenius.com.
Representation of communication with Barack Obama is not intended to be a factual statement.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
We need more listeners, more subscribers on iTunes.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to get to the point where the show is actually appearing on the main podcast page on iTunes.
Maybe I should sign up for it.
Yeah, please do, fucker.
I don't have the iTunes. I don't understand the. I don't have an I anything.
Do you get the? Do you at least get the RSS feed, which I've now made available on the blog?
I don't know what that is. RSS.
RSS feed. I think you subscribe to it somehow, and then something happens.
No, I know what that is. Get shows. No, I just do it the old-fashioned way with my refresh button.
Good. Good for you.
Refresh. Now we need to talk about the political side of it. I mean, we talk about the factual side, shot bin Laden in his ass. Now what I want to see is, I mean, all of this is useless. All of this means nothing in the real world politically and globally if we don't now use this as a pivot point in the way we make war against the terror. Right. Obama's got to let this. We've got to let this simmer for a while. We got to let it, you know, let all the crazy die down. We'll have to get the, you know, WikiLeaks or somebody's going to have to leak the photo. We'll have to put it all to bed. And then eventually we're going to have to come out. The White House, we, because I'm a de facto member of the administration, we need to come out and say, look, that's how to fight terror. Law enforcement, fucking intelligence, and then kick the door in and put bullets in asses. And none of that is happening in Afghanistan and Iraq right now. It's time to bring everybody home and like then send half of the armed forces to SEAL Team 6 school.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What's gonna happen for
right.
us.
Right.
I mean this is how it all should have been done from go. Is these special forces and, you know, law enforcement, because going to war against this whole idea of capital T terror, it just elevates the shit out of what it is. I mean, if this is something, just in the American psyche, if this is something, if what happened on 9/11 is something we can go to war against, literally mobilize our military against, think of how much bigger that makes it and how much scarier it makes it if it's something we actually have to go to war against.
Yeah.
I just want things like what happened on Sunday. I just want those to happen like every 20 minutes. Like I just want a Twitter feed, a SEAL Team 6 Twitter feed where it's just like, yep, kicked another door in, shot another motherfucker in the eye. Done, you know, boom, boom, boom. Just do that. Just go around killing these bitches.
Yeah. Well, that's what Lawrence O'Donnell reminded us of the other night in his – oh, it might have been last night in his rewrite, talking about what John Kerry had said in 2004, which he was rapidly crucified for,
yeah.
He said basically that he wants to reduce the war on terror to the point where it's nothing but a law enforcement issue, which is exactly what it ought to be.
Of course.
And so they, the Bush campaign turned it into this John Kerry is weak on terror meme, which is, John Kerry thinks that terrorism is a nuisance.
Doesn't understand the threat.
Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I don't think George W. Bush could spell nuisance.
Oh, but yeah, it was the GOP doing, setting the dialogue, setting the meme, but yet doing exactly the opposite of it. I mean, just so not getting it, but yet controlling the dialogue to such a ridiculous extent that they could get otherwise reasonable people to buy into that. It's magic. It's some kind of weird alchemy that they're able to do by taking these ideas that are completely the ass opposite of reality and making half the population buy into it and vociferously support it and defend it.
One of my favorite David Cross or favorite jokes, I think, from the entire Bush administration was a David Cross joke. It was a stand-up act. You might have recalled it. It was he said going to war on terror is like having a war on jealousy.
Right. It's an emotion. Right. It's a feeling. How do you exactly? That's it. How do you go to war against a feeling?
It's such an abstraction. Yeah. There's no way to really ever defeat it, which was the idea.
It's a never-ending war, and that's the point. That's what those guys want.
That's right.
The mass. I mean, I've said it before on the show. There should be no such thing, no such legal thing in the United States as war profiteering.
There should literally be no such thing. At a time of war, that no one should be able – there should be no legal profit motive in making war.
Yeah.
Like this, the moment – like you have to go to Congress or, you know, you got to get this and this. The moment you're legally in a war, that's when everybody turns off their bean counters, like the Northrop Grumman's and the fuckers that make missiles and bullets and all that shit. From at that moment – I mean, they ought to have, there ought to be a financial reason not to be at war. Like McDonnell Douglas and those guys ought to say, we got to wrap this shit up because it's killing us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, yeah. We're paying cost for these bullets. Fuck that.
It ought to be something that just happens in the background that we don't really, that's not really talked about a lot, that they just do it as a function of national security. We go and we hunt down people who might want to, you know, crash a plane into a skyscraper. We're just going to go and get them, and we're either going to arrest them or kill them. If it was coming down entirely to, you know, whether or not we should take our shoes off, they were really fucking it up.
Well, it's in two things. One, the taking the shoes off thing to me seems like it's a desperate act of the seemingness of safety. Like, I think there is a conversation in some room where it's like, look, if people aren't made to feel put out by this, then they won't feel like we're doing anything. Right. I mean, fuck. That's why nobody worried about port security or selling the port security management to Bahrain or whatever the fuck that was. No, you know, the first responders was never done. None of these things were done where it impacted people's lives. All of that was politically expendable. But the things that made our daily lives intolerable, like the fucking shoes and the 2 ounce things and the shampoo and all that, that subconsciously Americans, you know, the kind of Americans that are susceptible to this overwhelming fear are thinking, oh, we are really cracking down. We're cracking down on this shit. I got to take my shoes off. That means there's no more Richard Reeds, right? So that's one avenue. Make us feel put upon for safety reasons. And there's some huge portion of America that is made to feel safer that way. That, oh, if they don't check me, they, you know, yeah, fuck that. The other half of it is terror of it happening again politically and losing politically because of it. So it was, we'd do anything, torture, hang people upside down and put shit in their mouths, whatever it was, torture, anything we need to do to stop this, to stop this from happening again, because if it does, we're done politically. And that's the part that worries me, is that every administration, every post 9/11 administration, whether it's this one, the next one, whatever, is going to have that sense that their political future hangs on another 9/11 not happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for this president. So, I mean, for any president, I mean, the day after he announces he's got bin Laden, something else like 9/11 happens, he's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd be done. No president, it doesn't matter what party, who it is going to survive another massive 9/11 style deal.
Yeah.
It'll just be a massive default to the next guy.
Well, look, again, we just talked about this, but it's worth repeating. The guy has just had his most significant foreign policy success this past weekend. And it's not, I mean, bin Laden's body is barely cold. And they're already on to, well, he's a pussy because he didn't release the photos. Or look how much, you know, Dylan Radigan on TV this afternoon saying that, you know, oh, look at how much debt it's, you know, the president spent how much money and this is all we get.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think there's a lot of validity to that. But it's strange how quickly it devolves into criticism.
Oh.
And so can you only imagine if there was another large-scale terrorist attack, how rapidly this guy would be impeached?
Oh, yeah. Or they would try. I mean, with Congress the way it is now, they wouldn't be able to do it. But, you know, yeah, it's you're only as good as your, you know, the last 24 hours where you didn't get shit, where shit didn't get blown up, you know?
Mm.
I guess I'm like half heartened and half terrified of, and not terrified in a like where I sit up at night, but there is somebody out there that everything post 9/11 has been just clown show. The guy that tried to blow up his balls and the guy who locked his own car bomb in his car, you know, just been one amateurish, retarded thing after another. that makes me think that either they're just completely incapacitated by some of the successes the Bush administration had. They did have a great amount of success shutting down financial networks of Al-Qaeda and disbanding their cash flow and their fiscal mobility. It's either that or there's a cabal somewhere in Germany or fucking South America or somewhere that is planning a 9/11 times 10 that's going to be an ass beater, you know, like a Jack Bauer style ass beater.
Well, the most successful thing the Bush administration did was ending waterboarding. I mean, the CIA stopped using waterboarding in 2005. And so everything after that was traditional interrogation techniques, which actually yielded results, which actually started the ball rolling towards killing bin Laden.
Yeah,
it was the traditional techniques which were used on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And that's how he gave up the courier, with the traditional interrogation techniques, which every intelligence expert will tell you are more effective than waterboarding.
Oh, yeah. I won't even stoop to talking about this nonsense, bullshit, non-issue of, you know, waterboarding led us right to bin Laden. That's just, I won't even dignify that I won't even talk about it.
Well, Andrew Sullivan made a very significant point on his blog in which he said that, he basically narrowed it down to the Republicans crediting their participation in all of this with torture. I mean, basically say, well, here's our contribution. It was torture.
Yeah,
it was proud of it, which they did from whatever it was, 2002 to 2005.
Yeah.
And it didn't yield any results whatsoever. No actionable intelligence that we're aware of was gleaned from waterboarding.
Right.
Everything that became actionable was gleaned from traditional interrogation techniques, including this. But they don't want to mention that. I mean, they have something substantive that they could actually ballyhoo about their president, President Bush. But they're refusing to do that. Instead, they're latching their boats to this torture business, which didn't even work, which is now illegal, and which is highly immoral for reasons that we've debated over and over and over again. I was watching Morning Joe, you know. And for a guy who everyone insists is the reasonable Republican, I mean, he's one of the biggest ideologues when it comes to torture. The guy, I remember watching him just completely, you could see it on YouTube, just completely tearing into Chrystia Freeland.
Yeah.
From, she was with, I believe she was with The Economist then, but I don't know who she's with now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just ripping into her, just, and really taking on that Republican Barney Fife persona.
Yeah.
When it comes to terrorism. Fucking hell, we got to torture. Who cares who it is? Torture, 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 or else we're all going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's the way he is. And he spent the last several days crediting waterboarding. And again, this is not Fox News. This is the reasonable, quote unquote, Republican.
Right.
On MSNBC, crediting waterboarding as a contributing factor to the killing of bin Laden.
Yeah, and just proud, all proud about it.
Yeah. And then at the same time this morning saying that ideologues on both sides. Mm-hmm. Ideologues on both sides. You mean including yourself?
Yeah.
You know, and then I tweeted him. He didn't respond to it, but I tweeted him. I said, is the AP, the left, an ideologue on the left? Because they reported that, you know, harsh interrogation techniques, torture, wasn't used on KSM. The traditional techniques were used on KSM to lead to the name of the courier.
Yeah.
The name that he gave up for the courier, that one of the people they were torturing, the name they gave up was made up. And when they asked KSM about it, he's like, I don't know who the hell that is. Who are you talking about? What's that name
now,
made up?
Waterboard me some more. I'm enjoying it.
Waterboard me some more. 168 times they waterboarded that guy. And it was only when they started using traditional techniques that he finally started to give up real information. Because the idea is that when you're under duress like that, you're going to say, you're going to pull any whatever bullshit out of your ass to make it stop. And so typically it's mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. Anything that crosses your transom.
Yeah.
Which you're going to blurt out.
Brain is oxygen starved and you think you're drowning, mm-hmm. is not much. I mean, frankly, I can't imagine how waterboarding leaves you with a human brain capable of much of anything, much less, you know, strategic thinking in a way that gives you good intelligence. Mm-hmm. I just think you just waterboard someone to be a dick. Just like, I just want to fuck with you. It doesn't seem like a very good information extraction technique.
Yeah. So,
I mean, have you ever almost drowned? Have you ever had a really scary water experience?
Oh, yes. Several times. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was a basket case for days. Mm-hmm. I was at Camp Keystone in Odessa, Florida. My parents used to, for months at a time, my parents would send me to camp for months. I mean, just to get rid of me. They hated me so much. And they would literally send me for 6-8 weeks, like, just so they could go on cruises. They went to Egypt. They had all these great times. Woohoo! Get the fuck rid of me, right? Send me to camp. And there was this dock, this long, long dock out on this beautiful lake. It was really nice. But I was a fat kid, and fat kids just hate camp. I mean, you don't want to go to camp when you're fat.
Was it a fat camp?
Didn't have fat camps in the 80s like that. Or at least not in Florida. But, you know, I was one of maybe three fat kids at the whole camp, and it was pretty sad. But I found horses I was good with, so I ended up working in the stables a lot. Love horses, really good with them, love to ride. And archery, the things that didn't involve taking your shirt off and running around, you know, brown and happy. I was a very sad child. But so I'm out at this, I'm out on the lake, and there's this long dock, and I'm running. I was going to cannonball into the lake.
Running.
And I'm running in my waddly sort of way. And the slats on this dock were spaced in such a way that I got my, as I got to the end, I was going to kind of curl off the side and do a thing. And I got my foot, like two or three toes, caught between the last two slats on this dock. And it tripped me. It laid me flat out. I mean, it just dropped. I cracked my shins and I went into the water. And it all happened in such a way that I thought my brain, my bubble in my instrument panel that tells me where the horizon is, was completely upside down. Like my brain thought, okay, if I swim in this direction, I'm going to hit the surface, because I thought I had done like a 360 and I was turned back around and I could go up, but I'd really just gone face down. And so I'm swimming. I'm completely out of breath because I was unprepared, completely out of breath. I mean, just about to start sucking water into my lungs, and I'm swimming my little fat life off. I'm just swimming to beat the band, thinking the next stroke, I'm going to hit the top of the water. I'm going to get a breath. And I am just about to be just dead from having no breath, because I'm fat anyway. I got no lung capacity. And right at the point when my brain is going, okay, this is it. I'm going to hit water. I'm going to hit the surface. My fingers hit the bottom of the lake. I mean, hit the, you know, just bottomed out and just got fistfuls of dirt and mud. And I cannot tell you the panic that went through so I quickly turned around, got my feet down on the ground and pushed off. And when I hit the water, my head cracked against the dock and almost knocked myself out. That was, weeks I had nightmares about that drowning sensation that I was having towards the end there. I was blacking out. I mean, there's stars in front of my eyes. I cannot imagine if to do that to somebody on purpose 168 times. I mean, just be a fucking basket case.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, combine that with being held down, you know, and whatever this looks like in the video, they've got some sort of wet cloth that they're sticking in the guy's mouth and then dumping water over there. Of course, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or whoever they were torturing to get the name of the courier is just going to blurt out, oh, Joey Jojo Shabadoo Jr. And then, that must be the name of the courier.
Write that down.
Joey Jojo Shabadoo Jr. And this is, okay, let's go check with KSM. Hey, KSM, who do you think, is this, this other guy gave us the name Joey Jojo Shabadoo Jr. Is that the name of the courier? Who?
Sure.
Yeah. And yeah, he's being waterboarded. Yeah, of course that's him. Then later on, is that they stop waterboarding. I don't know who that is. I'm sorry, guys. You know, you were drowning me. I said anything. I was crazy.
Right. Joey Jojo Shabadoo.
It's completely.
That's the worst name I ever heard.
That's the worst name I ever heard. Joey Jojo.
Hey, Joey Jojo. Simpsons thing.
Oh, man.
We do have the same cultural lexicon.
I think so, yeah. That was good.
Hey, Joey Jojo.
Joey Jojo.
I think that was in the episode. Wasn't that the one where he became the mob boss? The guy controlling the plant's healthcare thing when hired goons. I think that was that episode.
It could be, because they always start in one place and then they quickly evolve. It's hard to tell.
He was all depressed and at Moe's. That was the funniest. There was a couple of seasons in there where absolutely nothing funnier on earth than The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I don't even watch anymore, do you?
No, sadly no.
No. I don't even know if it's still on, really. It's just so not funny anymore.
Right.
It's peaked.
So something a little more lighthearted. I don't know if you caught it's still related to the killing of Bin Laden. Something on the lighter side of the killing of Bin Laden is this series of tweets. Did you see these tweets that were compiled by Boing Boing?
Oh, the guy that – oh, yeah. No, yeah. Who is Osama Bin Laden?
Yeah, yeah. All these people don't know who Osama Bin Laden is. You want to be, who is Osama Bin Laden? Why should I care? Who is Osama Bin Laden?
I don't believe that.
Is he famous? Am I the only one who doesn't know who he is?
Yeah.
I'm probably retarded for asking this, but who is Osama? And why is it so good? He died.
Yeah. There may be a handful of I can imagine maybe one or two. If you're savvy enough to be on the Twitter machine, I mean, he just seems too culturally iconoclastic to be for any of that to be for real.
Yeah.
I don't buy it. If you know, that'd be like saying, what is this 9/11 you're talking about? You know, I think, don't you think Osama bin Laden and 9/11 are just inextricably linked and you can't know about one without the other?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So I don't buy any of that horseshit. I think that's just more media jerking each other off. Like, I don't know if you caught, I can't remember what I was watching on Sunday night when they broke in. It started as a crawl. You know, the break-in started as a crawl, and then I jumped over to MSNBC, and it was Dick Gregory or whatever the fuck his name is. Not Dick Gregory.
Dick Gregory.
Hey,
they couldn't find anyone to anchor on a Sunday night, so they got Dick Gregory.
They got Dick Gregory. Yeah, he was hawking those weight loss shakes. But in the build up to waiting for Obama to get to the podium, they were jerking each other off so hard, the media. Then they had Andrea Mitchell, and I'm like, oh God, Jesus. So I finally had to just turn the sound off and just wait for POTUS to show up, because the circle jerk of the media talking into this vacuum that it created for itself in that 20 or 30 minutes where they knew they had an announcement, but Obama hadn't finished writing the speech yet. Mm-hmm. Unbearable.
Yeah.
Unbearable. I don't know if you watch any of it, but it was absolutely the worst jerk off I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Smarmy Mike Vaccara sitting there going, well, can I say Lynn Bodden? Can I call him Lynn Bodden, and can I say that he's not alive? Oh, no, I can't say that. Yeah. Can I?
I so wish that somehow the White House had coordinated it in a way where they could have just broken in hard, like just a hard cut in, and there's Obama. You know, no press buildup. Press doesn't know jack shit. Like, they just call and say, the White House calls, yeah, this is the White House. Put me on the air right now. Mm-hmm. So that there's just no, I didn't want to hear that from these jerk-offs. Mm-hmm. They had to get, you know, they had to get Brian Williams out of bed, and he had to run in because it was David Gregory for a while, and then all, oh, there's Brian Williams. They're just all, ugh, Brian Williams. They're just hairdos.
Yeah.
Andrea Mitchell. Andrea Mitchell can barely put a sentence together, and she's got her own show.
She's terrible. Yeah,
and
what was entertaining to me, of course, is that they brought in, they wheeled out Tom Brokaw, which was always going to be fun, because you knew that at some point Tom Brokaw was going to have to try to pronounce Abbottabad. I don't know, is Tom
Abbottabad? They captured Obama in Abbottabad.
So, yeah, somehow several people who simply cannot speak somehow get major anchoring gigs.
Yeah. Andrea Mitchell,
you can just drive a truck through her pregnant pauses and stumbles.
Yeah. One day I turned on her show. She's got this whole show in the middle of the day, and I'm like, what? There's just a whole run there where she just word salad all over the place. and they were going to, they were cutting to her, and she, it looked like she was sitting at the Supreme Court Library or something. It's, you know, one of these crappy NBC News backgrounds that they put behind a kind of a clueless person to make them look professorial, you know? There's books on the shelf. Like, what are we cutting to Andrea Mitchell for in the fake library background? Oh, just get this over with. God, Jesus. Took all the steam out of the announcement.
Somehow they managed to catch Osama bin Laden in Bon.
Why did Brokaw turn into such a douche in his old age? I always loved him. Mm-hmm. He had a little bit of credibility. Yeah, Brian Williams, every time Brian Williams goes on the fucking Daily Show, he's on 30 Rock. Anytime you need a big dumb anchor to show up on some fictional thing, there's Brian Williams. To me, that completely cuts all of their credibility as a journalist out, as far as I'm concerned. Just done. Don't, if you're a journalist, but I guess they're not journalists. It's not like they're back there like Murrow with a cigarette behind his ear clacking on his own typewriter.
No.
Right? None of these guys write their own copy anymore. So I guess they're not journalists. They're just hairdos. They're media stars.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind Brian Williams so much because I've seen him in sort of extemporaneous situations and he does have a brain in his head.
Oh, yeah. But I don't like all this. I don't like the, hey, look at me, I'm Brian Williams, and and I'm going to go on the Daily Show, and I'm going to be. He's just too wacky for me. Mm-hmm. I don't want wacky.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, he is too wacky. He is wacky.
See fucking Cronkite show up on Laugh-In, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like Cronkite had some, he had some journalistic integrity. Cronkite wasn't wacky.
Yeah.
I don't want wacky in my journalism.
Yeah, I tweeted about that night. I was like, God, where's Cronkite when you need him?
Yeah.
You know, you want Cronkite to come out with his sleeves rolled up, with the tie, a little bit disheveled with those big Coke bottle
big
bottom glasses. Yeah.
Take them off and go, oh, this is, yeah. This is,
they caught Osama bin Laden.
Shot him in the ass.
Shot him in the ass. Shot him in the face.
Bullet right through his fucking eyeball.
Bullet right through. Blew his head clean off.
Clean off.
Meanwhile,
and I guess, you know, I probably just like everything, just like, I mean, and I make fun of people who have these sort of pie in the sky feelings for the 50s and the, you know, the just how, I mean, like Murrow, if you've seen Good Night and Good Luck or you know anything about Murrow, he hosted his own sort of entertainment show. It was like the price he paid.
Yeah.
CBS to do the other thing he did, which is bore the shit out of people with actual journalism, without actual reporting. They made him do this, hey, look, I'm talking to Liberace kind of show, you know? So I guess there was always this thin line between entertainment and news, but it's just become insufferable now to the point where you just want to watch C-SPAN, those dry, desiccated, wheezing, you know, ancient people on C-SPAN that are so just fucking boring. But they're not wacky. There's nobody wacky on C-SPAN.
There's no one. It's a wacky-free zone on C-SPAN, that's for sure.
You'll never see, you know, a C-SPAN guy show up on 30 Rock. Hey, I'm a C-SPAN, bow! You know, running around like fucking Rip Taylor. Mm-hmm. Media. The news used to be, people don't understand what the news used to be. The news used to be the government's deal with networks. Was news, right? Because the government owns that bandwidth. The government owns the space where network news gets beamed into, or did, you know, it does. But in the old days, there was just the big three. There was just ABC, CBS, NBC. And the government said, look, we'll give you this airspace and you can make a shit ton of money off of it. We don't care. We'll give you this bandwidth that you can pump your bile in your stupid shows and I Love Lucy and the fucking $64,000 question. You can do that. But here's the deal. Every couple hours, you go on with an hour's worth of news and you educate the fucking stupid public. That was the deal. Like, it was the FCC made this deal and said, you've got to do news. Because news has always been a loss leader. Because it's hard to advertise for it and people don't give a shit. But back then, that was the deal. Now, it's the complete conflation of those two. Entertainment, and it's like, now, how can we be so outrageous and wacky and get people's attention and sell ad time on news?
Yeah. I mean, the loss leader is built into what news ought to be, because the truth doesn't always sell.
Truth is boring as fuck.
That's exactly right. So
that's why, you know, Radio Free America and all that shit, the liberal AM radio sucked cock and died. Mm-hmm. Because it's boring. Yeah. The truth is boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it takes a personality like Maddow or Olbermann. I mean, those are personality-driven shows. You watch that show because Rachel is impossible to take your eyes off of when she's in righteous, truthy mode.
Yeah, but even still, right? It only gets in sort of people 12 and up in the broadest possible demographic. You know, Fox News Channel still kicks their asses, which, again, you know. So, but I mean, that said, in the sweet spot demos, Rachel actually wins.
Yeah.
In that time slot.
Yeah. And I don't care about, I mean, as long as she gets whatever ratings MSNBC thinks she needs to get to perpetuate her. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to be watching her when I'm in my 80s, like when I'm in an oxygen tent. I want her to be around because she is a national treasure. And no one does what she does. And she is she's just a force.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the truth. I mean, even I find myself zoning out sometimes because it's overwhelming. It's sad. I mean, I watch people tweet during the Rachel show, and it's like there's an emotional vector to it where you're just like worn out by it. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, God, Jesus. And that's what Fox is so brilliant at, is manipulating their audience in just brilliant, genius ways to make to stoke not this sense of, oh, God, but the sense of, oh, girl, Hulk smash.
Yeah.
Right. We could do that, but I mean, and Olbermann sort of had that, and it plays to a certain audience. You know, it plays very specifically to a certain audience. But Fox has just made an art out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here's another case study to prove this theory, which is that, you know, it's needless to say, there have been other stories in the news the last several days, but still, no one is talking about Michigan. No one is talking about Katherine Ferguson Academy. No one's talking about the emergency financial managers in that state taking over municipal governments and selling off all public assets. I mean, no one's talking about it because it's painful. And again, it's not sexy.
Well,
it's not.
Right now,
it's not Bin Laden's face blown off.
For right now, I'm okay with the 24-hour Bin Laden news cycle. I mean, not okay with it. But I understand it. I mean, it is the biggest news.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you've got a network that's on 24 hours a day, MSNBC is on not 24 hours a day because they run the prison rape shows. But then, but for most of the day, they're on. There's room for it.
Right.
I mean, between headline news, MSNBC, CNN, I don't even count the I don't know what the fuck Fox is doing, but those real networks, they have time. They have time to talk about these other stories outside of, you know, 8 minutes on Rachel's show. They can cover them. It's likewise with the climate crisis. I don't know if you saw this. I hate to take us off of our Bin Laden track here. But, I mean, there was major news with global warming that came out this week.
No, I missed it completely.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like that sea levels could end up rising by 5 feet this century.
Holy fuck.
5 feet. Yeah. Yeah.
That's significant.
Yeah. The ice of Greenland and the rest of the Arctic is melting faster than expected and could help raise global sea levels by as much as 5 feet this century, dramatically higher than earlier projections. An authoritative international assessment says the findings, quote, emphasize the need for greater urgency, unquote, in combating global warming, says a report of the Arctic Monitoring and Assessment Program, AMAP.
I'll tell you,
the scientific arm of the eight
nation beachfront property in Iowa.
There you go.
Beachfront. You're fucked. You live on an island.
Yeah, that's screwed.
You're
totally screwed
to the moon.
But I said, you know, I said on the blog today that, I mean, at what point are people going to pay attention? This is going to be water up to your knees in Kentucky before people start paying attention.
Yeah.
And even then, it's going to be like, well, we need to deregulate the oil companies.
Yeah.
And we need to give them tax cuts.
No, Republicans would be, we got to attack that ice.
We got to
go to war against icebergs.
A war against the water.
Fucking dumbass icebergs.
That water ain't going to come up and wash away my house.
Story today that NASA had this long, long experiment with space and time and solved another one of Einstein. I don't understand Einstein. Motherfucker sat around coming up with theories and shit that could not even be proved in his lifetime because the instrumentation and the science didn't exist. He's just like, oh yeah, in 30 or 40 years you're going to build this thing and it'll tell you that I'm right. Don't worry about it. They did another one, like this space-time vortex around Earth. They've mapped it now. there's this whole NASA thing. I'll have to post a link to it on the show, or so I'll send it to you for the blog. But it's fascinating. There's this whole NASA thing where they found this massive time bendy thing that Einstein predicted, and it's totally true. Just like he predicted how the Earth punches, you know, things with mass punch holes in space, and that's what gravity is. It's not just this bullshit thing. It's this dent in space. Science is happening, like really important things, and these are people, the Republicans, who just said, no, that's not, no, we're not, we don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in that shit. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't matter if don't places in that are shit. Up to their ass in water with these people. It's another, well, Noah lived through it. Yeah. That's their answer. Mm-hmm. Eh, yeah. It's all right with Noah. Yeah. Just build some arcs.
Well, if it doesn't also have the advantage of who do we attack, you know, if it's, there's not a villain behind it, it's more difficult to report. There's no, and they certainly don't want to report the villains behind global warming because they're paying for the airtime.
Yeah.
I mean, watch a Sunday show. Look who's advertising on the Sunday shows. They're all energy companies. I mean, every week you watch Meet the Press. This is prior to the oil spill last summer, and it was BP.
Yeah, or ADM.
ADM, that's right.
Companies that movie, The Informant. I fucking love that movie. You ever seen that movie with Matt Damon?
Matt Damon. No,
God, that's a funny movie.
I didn't see that.
Oh, it was so funny.
Today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Next week is National Anxiety and Depression Awareness Week. And so Bubble Genius is promoting peace, love, and happiness on their site. By the way, if you're an appropriate soaps to go along with that, Mother's Day is this Sunday, and it's too late to order anything for Mother's Day. I found that out the hard way. I was going to order a bunch of stuff for my mom from Bubble Genius, and couldn't do it. It was too late. But there's soap literally for any occasion there, so you know you can still order other stuff and send it to mom. It's going to be late. It's going to be a little late because you waited too long. Damn you! You didn't get your order in time. You should have ordered ahead of time and not waited to the last moment for mom. Well, you can go and you can get some other stuff next week, and you know it'll eventually get there. But Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. And they're really brilliant, and they all smell good. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your dogs. They even have a few things for your home. Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the world. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. And you can check out their sales products at, or their sale items at bubblegenius.com/sale.html. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be seeing the Bubble Genius people here in Hawaii this weekend.
I know you are. That's awesome, but fuck you for living in Hawaii.
So, oh, and also, when you order your products from Bubble Genius, make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS, and get 15% off your entire order. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Ooh, Jackie Cooper died.
Jackie Cooper just died? Really?
I thought he'd been dead forever.
Yeah, I mean, Perry White,
Jackie Cooper. Jackie Perry Cooper. White was still alive.
I mean, he was a little rascal, for God's sake.
Yeah, he was.
He was a little rascal, and he's just now died. That's crazy.
Just now, yeah, today or yesterday. I mean, he was 88. God damn, I thought he was 88 when he did Superman.
Yeah, I mean, he looked 88 in 1978.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I'm convinced that old timey people looked older.
Yeah, I think they absolutely did.
I think after anyone born after 1960 looks younger than their actual age, and everyone born prior to that looks older than their age.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, really, Jackie Cooper, go back and look at Superman. Superman the movie. Jackie Cooper looks 90 years old in that movie, and he just died at the age of 88.
And that movie was 30 years old.
I mean, not to be totally disrespectful to someone who just died, but no, I mean, he did look old.
I really seriously thought he was, he'd long since been dead.
Yeah. I mean, like, and like Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy looked like they were in their hundreds for about 30 years.
Right. Like they just kept doing movies in their hundreds.
Yeah. And well, look at, I mean,
first trip I ever took to New York City, first time ever, me and a buddy of mine, we went, we just had this unbelievably gay outing that wasn't gay, where we went to a, we stayed at the Algonquin together. This was, there was no man love in this story, but it was just fun.
I got to find some Elvis is probably gay music to play with every one of these stories.
We can have a segment every week talking about how all my gay experiences that are just not gay. It's just, that's fine. But we stayed at the Algonquin in the same room, and we went to see Ralph Fiennes in Hamlet.
Oh, my God.
And rented tuxedos.
You rented tuxedos?
And went and did all this and met Ray, and got to see Ralph Fiennes. And we were walking over from the Algonquin. This is okay. We were walking from the Algonquin over to the plaza.
Holding hands.
To have a lovely cocktail.
Yeah.
Cocktail. And it's late. And we're walking that way up the park. And here comes this little old man in a hat, little felt hat, and a fucking umbrella. And this was maybe a month after Jessica Tandy had died. Mm-hmm. And it's Hume Cronin. And my buddy is an actor. He's actually he's doing really well right now with voiceover work. He's done some Minute Maid commercials. He's just a great guy. So he's an actor. So he's just, he said, that was Hume Cronin. I said, yeah, I know. And he's like, let's go talk to him. Because we just passed him. Like,
let's go grab his balls.
I said, John, you cannot run up and talk to Hume Cronin on the street in New York like a week after his fucking wife just died. You can't. I had to talk him down. I had to talk him out of running up on Hume Cronin. And we were also there. It was the weekend that the Tonys were in. The Tonys were. So we saw.
You guys went to the Tonys?
Nathan Lane ran past us carrying his laundry, like the shit he had to change into for his. And we said, "Hey, Nathan Lane!" He's like, "I gotta go." So that was gay. And then we saw Gregory Hines. Oh my God, this story gets gayer and gayer.
Yeah, it really. But
it was a great. It was a great, great time. We had a great trip, and then our friendship was sullied by an unfortunate run-in at a strip club. But we won't talk about that.
Well, if you went to a strip club.
That was the least gay thing we did.
I think, well, maybe you were just compensating.
Maybe.
I think, like, this weekend is really, really gay. We have to go to a strip club.
Yeah. And it was a really high, it cost a fortune. It was a really high-end, really, really nice high-end strip club. And we got into a tussle over the affections of one of the lovely ladies.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you guys wearing sweaters around your neck, like tied around your neck?
Yeah. We look like a bad guy in like The Karate Kid, you know, like with a fucking sweater around it, tied in a jaunty knot around your shoulders. I swear to God, I'm not gay, but that was, now that I look back on it, I haven't really thought about that in years. That was an extremely gay trip.
Yeah, it was really gay.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that. But
no,
that's really
gay. I love that guy, but yeah. I've never put anything in him.
Good boy.
Oh my God, that's a gay story, John. I love you, but I'm sorry.
Do you still have the sailor suits?
Yeah, we do, the matching sailor.
Do you still fit into them?
Yep. And this was at a time when this was in a time in my life when I was cadaverously thin because I just broken up with the greatest guy I ever knew. Mm. So my own aunt at this period of my life, my own aunt walked right past me at the airport because she didn't recognize me because I was so cadaverously thin. So the few pictures that survive of that gay outing, I don't even recognize myself. I look like a fucking Skeletor. It's really creepy. Like I bought a suit for the trip, just a walking around suit, not for the show. And I still have that suit, and I can't even believe I ever fit into that.
It's a sailor suit.
Like Scarecrow. Yeah, a sailor suit with the little short pants. The patent leather shoes.
Woo.
Woo, I was a dandy.
Little sailor cap with it tilted at a jaunty angle on your head.
A jaunty angle. But, so, long story short, I saw Hume Cronin once. I've had lots of little brushes. Well, you know, I've had lots of little Gump-like brushes.
Of course you have.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And they just always tend to be associated with something extremely gay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you didn't, anywho.
You didn't invite Hume Cronin back to your heart-shaped bed in the honeymoon suite with your buddy?
That's how the Donna Mike story. And then we had, what was it? Then we had mad, glorious three-way man sex.
That's right.
What was that show, that game they used to play? Where you had to, it's like the big, you had 10 lies or something you had to go through.
And then it always ended up on that.
We had glorious three-way love.
That's right.
We made glorious three-way love.
I got it.
Don and Mike show in D.C., they had this game where you call up and they would give you, between the two of them, they would make up, or even buzz sometimes, they would make up these outrageous lies, mm-hmm. the story that just got progressively more unbelievable. And people would call it, and then they would call a family member and not tell them that it was a game and see if the family member would believe it. It was a fucking hilarious game. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's a funny game. But that was 100% true story.
Yeah. I've got to find some Elvis is probably gay music.
You do. Mm. And we'll just do next time. I will have a story ready for it because I've got 100 of them.
So I wanted to play this. I started the show with the montage of Osama Obama gaffes. This goes back at least 2 years. Because here's some more from this. These are from the campaign. These are kind of funny. We're going to play some of these here. And you'll also hear a poor Ted Kennedy made this one too, but it's a really funny one. So here we go.
All I'm saying about the Patriot Act is that the elected representatives of this country, including Osama, Obama,
actually just look at what Obama.
By the way,
said.
that was John Ashcroft.
Oh, Christ.
That first one was John Ashcroft.
That chimp.
Unbelievable.
He's one of the worst people in the fucking world.
He really is.
John Ashcroft. I hate that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So let's continue.
So just look at Barack Obama said just yesterday.
Why don't we just
That's
ask
Romney,
Osama
right?
Bin Laden?
That was
Osama. Osama Obama. Obama, what is since he won by such a big amount.
And now we have what some are reading as a suggestion that somebody knock off Osama. Obama. Well, both, we could.
talk about how you really feel.
Taliban has been.
That was terrible. I mean, let's kill them both. Osama, Obama, I don't know. Let's kill them both. So funny.
I laughed and laughed until my uterus fell out.
Killing the president's hilarious. Ha 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 ha. Still, that was on Fox News. Go figure.
God. Gaining strength, and Obama bin Laden is still at large.
I think that was Osama bin Laden.
Coming up. That was actually a guy saying Obama bin Laden in front of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And president correcting him.
Yeah.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
At first, they said it was no big deal, but now we know the truth about Osama bin Laden. Barack Obama's scare in the air. That story coming up.
Kerry says he believes Obama is the right person for the job.
The report says that Osama bin Laden.
We had a recording come out of the Obama headquarters. Not Obama. I'm sorry.
Man,
bin Laden.
I know what you mean.
Bin Laden. First off.
I mean, that's probably my favorite one because he's so upset that he did that. I mean, this is one of the only people who expressed any sort of remorse at saying that was Chris Matthews in that clip going, oh, shit, I'm sorry. You know, I just did it. I did it again. But, you know, he did it twice in about 10 minutes last night, which I don't have audio of.
You cannot help it if you're just spitballing. I can understand, the professional journalism thing, but it's not always insidious. The one right before Chris Matthews that you just played, that one was so on purpose. It's like one of those funny videos that you know on America's Funniest Videos. That you're like, oh, they faked that. That one was so for fake that makes me want to throat punch that guy.
Bin Laden,
what's that? You just know when Tweety does it, he's just being an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just accidentally.
He's just doing it. I mean, he's barely containing the spittle into his mouth.
His leg tremors.
Yeah. But, he's been great, too.
Yes,
I would say for at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
He's been on fire. Yeah. He's one of those few, there's quite a few of them, but I mean, he's such a politico. He's such a political junkie that he just has no stomach for stupidity, for just this blinkered clown show, this pig ignorance. He's just got no temper for it. No, he just will not put up with it. And I really appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit of a doofus. He was at Ted's memorial. I didn't know he used to write speeches for Jimmy Carter. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so there's a speech writing club. God, I want to be a fly on that wall. There's a speech writing club in D.C. where speech writers past and present get together and have meetings, like secret handshake meetings. I want to be in that room so bad. And that's why Matthews was there and Adam Frankel, and Ted was like their God. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that room, Ted Sorensen was God, and Tweety was part of that crowd. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be a presidential speechwriter so bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Going back to what we talked about at the top of the show, I mean, what they got to do is come up with some sort of trick to keep themselves from doing it. Because it's getting the point of being absolutely unprofessional.
Bin Laden is the way to do it. I mean, that's
Bin Laden.
Just say Bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bin Laden.
It's ridiculous.
Is Barack Obama right when he says,
I don't think he can have much impact now in terms of managing the organization because that link between Obama and the people under him is pretty fragile.
Fortunately, there was a graphic. Instead of saying, where's Osama, it said, where's Obama? We want to apologize for that.
His administration, of course, ends in less than a week. And Obama's, Bin Laden's attempt, I'm sorry.
I love when they say Osama correctly.
Yeah.
And then they correct themselves to what the incorrect one. They correct themselves to Obama.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. That's hilarious. Just brains just shooting off in all directions. Just poor things.
Ever Obama bin Laden is hiding. Because we can't find Obama.
And tell me what you think he meant. That McCain, he might know where Barack Obama is, but he won't go to the cave and get him. And he was saying that Obama would.
After that, there was during that Friday. Remember that Friday before?
That was Jim Mikuláševski.
Was that?
Who's like, who's like the reporter bot. I mean, that guy is such a newsman. Totally old school. It's like the Ron Burgundy old school.
He's been the White House dude since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Jim Mikuláševski. I remember that guy from literally when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. He's just been standing in front of that great big Pentagon seal for his entire life.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. I sent you a link from YouTube. I don't know what I was looking at on YouTube, but I discovered this link, and it was George Michael and Jim Vance on Channel 4 in Washington laughing at some clip of like a runway model tripping and falling.
But
it was like from 2007. George Michael recently passed away from cancer. But I couldn't believe that those guys were still, especially Jim Vance, that they were still anchoring Channel 4 in 2007. Yeah. Those guys were anchoring in the 70s. I mean, they were the first.
We were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still get, if I hear Barbara Harrison's voice, I get sick to my stomach because my first day of school at Lake Braddock, I had come from this little bitty school in Florida. And I don't know if you remember, if you ever went to Lake Braddock, if you ever saw Lake Braddock.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's like Robinson, right? I mean, Robinson and Lake Braddock were the two monster mega schools in Fairfax County. Mm-hmm. And they were fucking gigantic.
Yeah.
And I remember driving by Lake Braddock and seeing it and saying to my parents, what is that, like a nuclear power plant? They're like, that's your school. I was like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, Lake Braddock had a big purple wall at the stadium that they always would paint the year of the graduating class.
That's right.
on the wall.
And somebody would come and punk it.
Yeah, but it was gigantic. It must have been 10 stories tall. That wall with the number on it. Yeah, with the year.
And so the very first day of school, I was sitting in my living room in this house in Burke, you know, waiting for my doom because, you know, fat, awkward douchebag kid going to this giant school. And Barbara Harrison was on. And I just, anytime now I hear her voice, because she's still there, she'll never get fired because she's the worst anchor, worst news person in the world. But she'll never, ever get fired. And if I, to this day, if I go back and visit my dad and I hear her voice, I get sick to my stomach because I get that first day of school jitter just from hearing her voice. She's been there forever.
Yeah.
Same with Jen. And did I ever tell you that I accidentally hit on George Michael's wife?
No, you didn't.
I did. She was, oh my God, she was so hot. She was unbelievable. Just this goddess. And she came into my bookstore at Tyson's too, the Galleria, where all the rich people hung out and all the Saudi princes and stuff. We got some serious rich people in that store. And she was in, and I'm like, hey, can I help you find a book? And I'm putting my moves, you know, my one move on her.
Oh,
and
yeah, I remember this story. Okay.
Yeah, and then here comes George Michael. He's about 40 feet tall.
Yeah.
Guy was gigantic. Yeah. And tan, looked like a leather saddle. Looked like fucking George, not George Papard. Who's the guy from, like, Curly from
George Hamilton.
Yeah. Just glowing. And just put the hammer down on me. Like, made me feel like a douche.
Yeah.
I'm a tall guy, and he made me feel like a little tiny person.
George Michael's sports machine.
Yeah, he was like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, 7 feet tall.
And just it was looked more glorious than he did on TV. Like, he was even badder ass in real life than on TV.
And people don't know, George Michael was a boss jock. George Michael was an AM, like old school AM music DJ.
Yeah, out of like St. Louis or some fucking.
I used to have his audition tape. Where it was just him talking up records, like 50s and 60s records. And he was one of these big boss jocks. You know, these guys, these fast-talking DJs. And that's a special kind of skill. And that guy had it.
Yeah. Don Geronimo had it, too.
Don Geronimo special.
Don was an unbelievable DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because Don did it from the age of, like, Don started in radio when he was, like, 15.
Yeah. He just wanted to be in radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do those contests where, or just not even a contest, but somebody would call in and they'd want him to do a lead in on a record where he would talk over the intro and he could nail it every time.
Every song, no matter what song it was.
What the fucking song was, he could, I've never seen anything like that. And I don't know anything about radio, but it just seemed like that was a skill.
That's a skill.
Like they would just name a radio, they'd name a song and they'd rack it and he could just drop that thing just right to the point where the lead-in stop is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we're losing everybody talking about this, but it's something I love. I love. Yeah, I don't. I don't give a shit either.
Just talk to each other.
I just love. Yeah, I know. That's right. I just love that DJ stuff, and it's stuff that you only really appreciate when you hear it done and you're paying attention to it. Otherwise, you're just like, why are they talking over the record? I want to hear the record. But no, you just because it's one of these rare skills. And when I was doing, I did Top 40 Music Radio for about a year. In the midst of doing just regular talk radio, but I did
Bob Seska coming at you every.
Yeah, I worked at a top 40 station in Allentown, Pennsylvania, for about a year. It was terrible. It was the worst job of my life because everything was scripted, and they had for every song that you would play, next to the song they would list the length of the intro to that song.
Wow.
So and then there was a little timer. So when you'd cue the song, when you'd actually play the beginning of the song, there was a timer on the console that would start ticking upwards.
Oh, brother.
And so you knew, so you could say, like, Tom Cochran's Life is a Highway, the intro is 17 seconds. So you knew that at the end of 17 seconds, I don't know why that song. Life is a highway. And then you knew is exactly when the vocal
would
start.
Bullshit jive. Hey, Life's a Highway, everybody. Be careful driving. It's top of the hour, 10 till 6. We sorry, got another, you know, and then right, you got to get all the way through that, and then you're 17 seconds driving. Life is a highway.
Exactly. So you speak right up to where the vocals would begin.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was 17 seconds.
You could do it without a timer, without anything.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
You just had this knack for it. It was unbelievable.
And even Mike O'Mara knows how to do that too. And really? they do that on the Mike O'Mara podcast.
Huh.
And they do that a lot, in fact. Because and another one who has that gift for doing it is Rob Spiewak. Mm-hmm. Can also do it. He's also on the Mike O'Mara show.
He lives and breathes radio, Rob.
Yeah. There's a natural intuition that goes along where you can actually kind of sense the measures, each measure, timed measure of a song, and anticipate when the vocal is going to come in.
Yep.
So sometimes they nail it, and they call it, you know, hitting a post. Sometimes they nail that post exactly right, and sometimes they accidentally flummox it and fumble it and end up speaking over maybe the first syllable of the first word.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, so if you have like Sirius satellite radio, if you listen to the 50s or I think it's the maybe even the 70s station, they still do it where they've got these big boss jocks.
Oh, man.
Who talk up the records. Yeah.
Hey, we got racks and stacks of the best on wax.
Exactly right. That's exactly what they do. And they can throw and they can do the, you know, they can do the time two different ways, where it's 20 minutes after 8 or 40 minutes till 9, everybody. Yeah, a chance of thunder boomers. They got lots of euphemisms for the weather.
TGIF, everybody.
Right.
So some of my fondest memories of childhood, though, are listening to Armed Forces Radio when I lived overseas and the Wolfman Jack show.
There was no
greater DJ ever than Wolfman Jack. And I mean, is he still alive? Do you know?
Wolfman Jack is dead.
Is he dead?
That's yeah, he's a shame. Dead. He died, I think, and I know the year he died. Now, Wolfman Jack died in 1997, I think.
Huh.
Which is ridiculous that I know that.
I just very fond memories of falling asleep on summer nights listening to Wolfman Jack on Armed Forces Radio. I don't know why. Jack.
The most grating noise that you'd ever hear on the radio was Wolfman Jack's voice. But now he's been replaced by Pharrell, Mike Pharrell. Have you heard of this guy? Yeah. Sounds like a weed whacker. If you play a weed whacker talking about sports, that's Mike Pharrell. Unbelievably annoying.
Yeah. Talk radio is there's a our local NPR affiliate in Omaha's got this news person. I won't mention her name, but oh my god, absolutely the worst voice for radio I've ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. So painful.
And bringing it back around to politics. I don't know how Mark Levin gets a show.
I don't either. Oh my god.
Aside from
the fact that he's crazy, he's the most annoying thing ever.
Yeah.
Like a Muppet. I mean, cartoon character.
It sounds like some wacky voice guy doing a cartoon voice.
Yeah.
And then he starts yelling about the president or the Democrats or liberals or whatever the hell he talks about on that show.
Yeah.
And it gets even worse. It gets even more nasally and shrill. It's terrible. The first rule about hiring someone to speak on the radio is that they have a pleasant voice to listen to.
Right. Yeah, you think.
You don't hire someone who sounds like a weed whacker to speak extemporaneously for 3 hours straight. You know.
Yeah.
Even if they know what they're talking about, if they've got an annoying voice, you don't want to listen to that voice.
I hate my voice. That's one of the reasons I don't ever listen to the show.
Are you kidding? I saw on Twitter someone even complimented your voice on Twitter today.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I don't like those tweets.
you don't like those tweets. Bullshit. You don't like those tweets.
I don't. Really, really. It's embarrassing. But no, I hate my voice. Always have. I've always wanted a big, booming, you know, deep, masculine voice like yours.
Well, this is the shame of Rob Spiewak, actually, is he doesn't have a particularly DJ-ish voice. I mean, you've got a nice enough voice, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's not DJ.
Rob, it's all the personality behind it. I mean, yeah. I just love Rob Spiewak. I just love him as a person.
And he actually does like a boss jock show for I think it's KCCJ in Des Moines, Iowa.
Really?
Yeah, and he does. It's like,
he doesn't live there now, does he?
What's that?
He doesn't live there. Does
no,
he?
No, no. He actually pre-records
in the DC area.
But I mean, I actually watched him do one of his shows because I thought this guy is really good at talking up records. And I thought for sure that he's got some sort of script or he edits it all together. So it's so tight. But I actually watched him on a webcam do one of his shows on KCCJ. And he just grabs a record, throws it in and is able to do like some sort of crazy boss jock segue right up to the vocal and just put together a whole like 3 hour show. As if he's just, I'm doing a show. Here we go.
Well, he's just like Don. He's been living and breathing radio forever.
Yeah, it's such a natural gift for being able to do that kind of radio.
He was like 18 when he started on the Don and Mike show.
It's a shame that no one likes that kind of radio. No. I mean, it's not like people are dialing, I got to hear more Boss Jock radio.
Yeah.
But no,
I love it. I just love the cheese factor of it. I love it all. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't exist that much anymore.
No, it doesn't. But maybe one of these weeks I'll break out some iTunes records and try it myself. It's been years and years and years since I did it. And, of course, as I was saying, when I was doing it, there was the crutch of having the timing all, you know, laid out for me. So I didn't have to really even think about it. And some of the stuff, they would, you know, we pre-record the phone calls.
Yeah.
And then play them back on a reel-to-reel cassette. Or not a reel-to-reel cassette, but a reel-to-reel tape deck.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I love your description of the show today. Before we started the show, I think you tweeted something effective how we're going to be taping the show.
Yeah, we're going to tape.
Tape. Like, yeah. Cue up my
I'm
giant reels.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, right.
Going to tape.
I'll go through with my razor blade and my little pieces of tape to cut together the show later.
You mean that's not how you do it?
Not with tape. No, sorry, sir. I do not use magnetic tape for this show.
Really? Is it a phonograph?
I use one of those big...
The cylinder?
Yeah, the big cylinder made of wax.
Watson, come here, I need you. Watson.
Watson, come here, I need you. Right. Also a boss jock, by the way. Thomas Edison.
He was. The very first boss jock.
The very first boss jock.
Yeah.
The very first
jock. Racks and stacks are the best on wax, everybody. It's Tommy, coming to you.
It's Tommy the Rocket Edison coming to your favorite D-E-E-J-A-Y.
I invented this shit.
20 minutes after 8, 40 minutes till 9, everybody. Playing more continuous music. So annoying. I can't imagine why it's not popular anymore. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We'll be back next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
President Obama speaking from the East Room of the White House, telling the nation and the world President Obama is in fact dead.